Accession number 28416, Reel 4.
Bill, you were telling me that on the route to Starlock Bluff 3...
Yes.
On the route...
What we were in, can we remember? I don't think we can remember, really, but... I think it was carriages, I think, again. And Mickey Byrne, yes, he was a mad one. He leapt out of the window at one stage, rolled about a bit and got shot at, but they picked him up again. I don't think anybody got out on that rail trip. It was quite a useful way of getting out, of course. A lot of people did make it when trains slowed down a bit. So we arrived at Sargon and were put in these wooden sheds, which were all quite new, and they all had new beds and new this and new that and the other. Everything was new. And new bogs outside and washing place. And lots of... There's a big camp, of course, and the sheds were a long way from the boundary. We hadn't forgotten about the muddle. We were always looking for an opportunity of using it as a scheme, and we got it approved by the escape committee, who was a lovely guy named Fanshawe. I think he was in the Navy, actually. Could he have been? Might have been, yeah. Yeah.
Not if it was an RAF camp, he wouldn't have been.
He wouldn't have been normally, would he? A Fleet Air Arm people were put in RAF
right.
camp.
Because they were pilots.
And there was the other chap too. Oh dear, God, his name's evading me. They approved it and said, yes, well, fair enough, if you can find us a way of using the idea, do. They'd all been trying all sorts of ways of getting out of Sargon for the first time, especially a Dutchman who was actually a British pilot, Spitfire pilot. He used to walk up to the gate quite regularly, I think, and pretend to be a German troop coming out with another, not lot more, just behind another batch, as it were. He walked down. He didn't get away, though. But just missing out anybody else's efforts, we saw a way for providing what we needed during the summer. It must have been the summer, because we got out in June. Longest day in June is 22nd, I think, isn't it? And Jack seems to remember that's when it happened, which is a good day. Because the drainage system for the wash basins, there was a sort of communal wash basin place with drainage to a trench towards the boundary wire. And it was an open trench, so you could see the water in there. But I think the scum, the soap, use of soap and so on, seals the sand. It's all sand. Sargent should say, it's all sand. After about a foot of soil, the tree roots in it. And the trees have all been cut short. So the tree roots are still there, and little stubs, but sand. And this sand is jolly light, crisp sand. It's nice quartzy little bits, as it were. Not too fine. And so the stuff soaked away, except when it got silted over. And this is drainage again. This is the boat coming out to South Africa where the drains got blocked. Not to mention Athens where the drains got blocked. The drains got blocked, right? So there was a nice American there. He was a Spitfire pilot, Colonel Clark. Colonel Clark's... No, I won't say this, because this is a dirty word. Colonel Clark's campaign, anyway, was for comfort in the lavatory, put it that way. he had this thought that we ought to do something about this trench is not working very well. And so I said, yes, well, that's what we need, actually, a hole in the ground out here, because we're... a lot more than halfway to the wire, I think in order to... Oh, yes, that's right. It became very important because a flood of great big maggots started making their way from these draining room, actually, across to the camp where we lived. Monster sort of maggots, things, horrible. We've got to beat that somehow. And so the Germans were aware this was all happening too. So anything that was said, well, can we just scrape this, you know, improve things here? And they said, rather, and get on with it. And they even provided us with a shovel to do it. And that's a bit tricky. They didn't say, but on your conscience, you mustn't use it for escaping. If they had done, we had said, oh, we've got plenty of shovels. But they didn't. They gave us a shovel. And in order to make this scheme work, you had to have an empty trench. A perfectly ordinary trench, but say 6 feet deep, so you can tunnel out of the bottom. And this is what the result was when we slime cleaned the walls and gave it a bit of time to soak away. It did all soak away. And then by friendly blocking up the outlet from the actual wash basin, we stopped the water coming in. And there we were on a lovely Sunday afternoon, or Saturday afternoon, sunshine, digging out this trench for the Germans, for ourselves really, for our own health and comfort. Four of us, Jack, Henry, myself, and a chap named Searcy, another Australian, I think. There's so many Australians in this war, New Zealanders, always meeting them, wonderful. And he gave us a hand, help. And the water duly went down. I think we left it overnight for the next day for it to keep on soaking away, so it's working all right. But Henry was the first man in, I guess as early as we could be sure, and knowing when the appels would take place. And tunneling off he goes. And he dug 6 feet in about 5 minutes flat, more or less, with a good old... I think we had short shovels for looking after boilers, because we had boiler in some rooms, and for cooking. And he was small, Henry. Jack's tall, I'm tall. The other chap, Piercy, no, I've mixed his name up now, haven't I? However, he was a short chap too, but he was going to be there in order to fill in the hole behind us.
Can I just ask, what did you breathe?
Ah, well, good question. Well, initially, of course, we're in a short, let's say we're in 6 feet of tunnel, we're still breathing what comes, you know, is behind us. And until we need the breath, what we needed more, even than breath, was navigation. Because when you're once you're out of sight of the... You don't know where you're going.
You could be
tunneling back in. But no, we I don't know whether we thought it out, but we thought it out as we went along. Look, we have a little poker, actually, or pranger, as we call them, which we can... We were down enough below the roots that we could... We had about 2'6" of depth to crawl in, and the roots above our heads, which is as strong as your roof, you might say, against anything on top. But you could poke through it, through the roots with this poker, and they get a lovely little tapered hole, which is not only looks up at the sky, which is rather nice, but also towards where we're going, the wire. And so we've got a target on the wire, that tree, you might say. And in there comes the air, of course. And amazing how much did come in. But we didn't need that till the middle of the night, the first night. We must have got 18 feet, because we, time we laid out leg to leg, we're bound to be 18 feet, aren't we? I guess we got about 20 feet dug by that, you know, that day. And I'm thinking the day that we actually got out now. I can't remember if it was over 2 days. I thought initially the first day we let this drain down and let it fill up, or fill up as far as it does, in order the Germans see that they've gone, as it were. Or that it doesn't need improving. So I think next day we were improving it a little bit by making it a little bit deeper, you know, it worked better. So that by that day, we got 20 feet. I can picture it is physically possible, because it comes off straight if you push it back, and the chap behind you pushes it back further.
And then he treads it into a wall. So
well, he doesn't. He wasn't worried too much in this initially, because our friend Circe is packing it full to let the water in before the Germans do appear, but they didn't appear again apparently. But as you say, then I think Jack was at Henry was. I don't remember who was where. Anyway, whoever was at the back was pushing it tight, as you say, with your feet. Because you've got to pack it in to get it all in, otherwise you gradually get less. And we spent the night there sleeping in it. I think we had about 3 air holes, one each. And we went all the next day working on with our air holes there. And nobody noticed them, thank goodness. And that evening, we went the last little bit. See, our navigation was a treat because we came out, we could tell them we were at the wire because you have the post sticking down, and the wire comes down a bit too, but it's posts, as I remember mostly. We're in line. I think we're probably lined for a post just to make sure that's where we are. And beyond that was a sort of a ditch, and there, outside that is the walkway where the German sentry went up and down all time, all day, all night, and then the woods beyond that, a little roadway to cross. And one doesn't have any memories at all really in detail, because I guess we were really much asleep when we did sleep and scratching up there the rest of the time. We were working in the minimum of clothes to try and keep clean what we got, which were bundled up in a bag at the side, scraping out a hole. And I think we were in just good old, probably nothing, I don't know, not sure. Don't know, can't be sure. Probably had pants and vest on to keep warm. Yeah. But we had to dress enough to get out that we wouldn't be seen crossing. But we couldn't dress down there. We definitely dressed up in the woods. So we came out looking a bit odd, I reckon. It was easy just breaking up. The tree roots weren't there because that was not the tree.
And the one thing you knew for certain was the distance you'd travelled.
Oh, yes, we knew just how far we'd gone.
You measured against yourself.
We'd passed the first post, we'd passed the second ones, and that's where we come up immediately before we get to the road. It wasn't a tarred road, it was just a track road. Yeah, and I can remember coming up. I don't know who was in out first, really. I don't think we can have changed places. But Henry says he wasn't at the front. He says he was at the back. But I don't know. It doesn't really matter, because it all went okay. And there was you could hear footsteps, of course, going up and down. Yes.
Of course, you could hear footsteps, but they couldn't hear you, perversely.
No, because I think the last bit under the wire and then into the earth as we go up was very done with hands more than anything, rather than tools. And you can make such a nice little... With the roots there, all those things helped, all the roots and everything helped, because it gave you a little roof which you could have very small and then enlarge it. Yeah.
So you opened up, and where were you?
We were outside the wire, yeah. We could see there were two Germans going up and down, and they all seemed to go regularly, and I think we all got out with the first gap, as it were. 1, 2, 3. Don't suppose that took more than about 2 minutes altogether. If the legs would work after being straightened out for a long time. And I stopped in the... Oh, I don't know, I'm first across. In a way, I can remember looking back, and a lot of light, of course, on a camp, all these...
searchlights and so
lamps on, and the searchlights they have, yes. But they shine them all inwards, of course, which is a help. And there we were, the other side of the... I think we went a bit deeper into the woods and got some clothes on. Yeah. I think we ought to stop at that point. Please.
Bill, thank you very much for continuing with your contribution to the Sound Archive. I think we left it last time that you had just escaped from your little tunnel and had, with your two colleagues, you just made your way into the bushes or into a nearby ditch. Can you take the story up from there, please?
Well, thank you, yes. Thank you for that reminder of where we were. I've got to believe, and one has to, tries to transplant oneself to that same spot at this moment. That's quite tricky. But we certainly all did turn and look back to where we had come from, because that is such a wonderful feeling of seeing it all there, but not being part of it anymore. And with that done, it was dark, of course. The timing, it was, I don't know what time it was. I don't suppose we had any watches, actually. But we set off with the object of getting to an airfield. That was our pre-talked about escape route, because it wasn't awfully far to, say, Sweden or Norway from Sagan, on the Polish border, more or less. So we must have set off, three of us, carrying all that we had, which wasn't much food. And I do remember that we didn't see many people, but we did see somebody, and somehow we got by without saying much more than good night, whatever.
Gute Nacht.
Gute Nacht?
Yes, Gute Nacht.
Probably.
Yes.
That would have been what we'd have said, Gute Nacht. And shut up at that and quickly vanish, which we were lucky enough not to be intercepted at that point. That was still within the wood. Now, we had maps, sort of maps, pretty rough ones really, but I think they showed the general layout of Germany, including the Baltic, so they weren't very small scale. But somehow, I guess from the escape committee, we learnt what direction to go in. Crossing railway lines is always a help. We came to the railway line and we went along it quite a long way. At least you know where you're going then. But it's a terribly difficult thing to walk on a railway line, actually. If you go from sleeper to sleeper, you keep tripping up. But there came a time when we had to stop. And the only stop I can recall wasn't necessarily that night even. We just kept going. It was during the day because it was light enough to find some water. We hadn't got water with us. And I think water you need. So we're still walking in the... off, not on the roads, but just through countryside. It was probably 48 hours of that, I should think. There were a few thoughts amongst us about, well, how good is the water? How can you drink that water? It's out of a pond and a ditch. Anyway, I think I must have had some previous knowledge about water, because one of the first jobs as a civil engineer is to go down a hole and see the water being brought up from chalk boreholes. And I said, well, if we shake it up in our mugs and it frosts, it means it's not very good water to drink, because it's full of things living. But it was all right, actually. I mean, we drank it anyway. And that kept us going until the only memory I've got now is food. The food that we took with us, which was made by the Escape Society Committee, really, they took from the parcels that we get, was it once a month? I can't remember how long we took between them, but they were allowed to make up escape food, the name for it, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, it's a slab of, like, about as thick as a book, really, like that bottom book there, the spider web. A slab of chocolate and cocoa and milk and sugar all mixed up, so you can break off a lump, and that's a bit of good food. And that was a terrific help in keeping going. But here we were sitting on the edge of a field of new potato, newly planted, well, not newly planted, but the year's new crop of planted potatoes. And we pulled some of those up, thinking, well, I'm sure the Germans have got a law that anybody who steals growing food should be court-martialed straight away. But they were awful, actually, because one can remember the original potato that had been planted was still there, which had rotted all brown and horrible, and the other one was just too little to really amount to anything. But that's all we had. And this was the day, because at the end of this field was the river that we were looking for. I think we spent a long time watching it, as it were, to see what went on, hiding, but we didn't actually wait for it to get dark. And we now know that was a very big mistake, because all we'd spent all the other days travelling at night, and I think we needed to see the boats in order to get one. And the River Oder is quite wide, moving quite fast towards the sea up at Stettin on the Baltic, and there were a lot of canal boats being towed up and down the river as well. You can picture them. However, these long boats, they were really long boats rather than dinghies, with oars tied up to the bank, and we found one that wasn't, I think the stake came out all right when we pulled it, and so the stake stayed on board with its rope, and we got on board, and dear old Henry took, as a proper place for a skipper, took the couple of ropes, I think, onto the rudder, something like that. Well, maybe, no, it may have had a, can't remember. And Jack and I went to the oars, one each side. And we set off down the river rowing. And I can remember Jack's description of it afterwards. It was really beautiful. We were sitting down, rowing down this lovely river. Very pretty, trees each side, Poland on one side, Germany on the other. And we were underway for where we hoped to get, Stettin, and just keep rowing across the Baltic.
You thought you might row across the Baltic?
We would certainly, if we couldn't get in a boat, in a proper boat, we would certainly have set out across it. As it turns out, the escape chap in Kolditz, who'd been approving us, and he was a naval person.
This is the escape officer in Sagan.
In Sagan, yes.
Yes.
Who approved our scheme. Why do I mention it now? Because it makes one think of him, that he, in fact, was found in the Baltic, floating, dead. Mm. So he didn't make it, but he obviously must have done the same sort of thing that we were hoping to do, but nobody knows that really. But however, we rowed until the evening when we were pretty tired. It was getting dusk, and there was quite a big marshy, like the marshy patches we get beside our rivers, like you've got outside here really, that we could row into, long grass, and we turned the boat over and slept underneath it. And that was the end of our escape story, really, because on the other bank of the river, as we rowed down towards the end, there was a bicycle going along. And there was obviously a bridge quite near, because this policeman had crossed the river. He'd been sent to find somebody who'd pinched the fisherman's boat. Just simply that. I've lost my boat. Will you please go and find it? And the Germans, of course, are awfully organised for any sort of policing, from rural work to the dreadful SS. And he had pedalled down the river. He must have pedalled quite fast because the current was must have been about 4 or 5 knots, I suppose.
That was with you, wasn't it, the current, when you were rowing?
Oh, yes, the current was taking us.
So you were going quite a speed?
Oh, we were going quite a speed, but no more than the current did, really. I won't say our rowing added much to it, but he may have started from a place a bit down the river anyway. If the fisherman rang him up and said, "Look, my boat's gone, get after it." It must have happened before, I mean. And we did see this chap going down, but we didn't put him out as a policeman. And we were on the near side of the water where we'd reached it, which is the... we were going up downstream, so all the heavy traffic was actually coming down on our side as well. And this was a big mistake, the second big mistake, because there must be rules for which side you go to, something, or ships moving into each other always turn right, like we do in the air now, actually. And it didn't occur to us that we were being shouted at by the people in these towed barges. We thought they were saying, "Cheers, you know, hello, George." I mean, may not look like whatever his name was, but they were really saying, "You're on the wrong side of the road," we reckon. Which is...
And were they German or Polish, do you think?
Ah, couldn't tell, really, but...
Okay.
And what, well, the Poles had been ruled out by then, of course, so, I mean... But maybe their work still went on. Don't know.
And was the policeman German or Polish?
Oh, he was German.
He was German?
Yes.
Ah, right.
Yes.
Okay.
Because he took us to the German village cells. He took us to a village pub, actually. Yes. One always knows the mistakes you made afterwards, of course, but I do reflect on them quite often and think, well, if only. If only we'd twigged that this traffic was, in fact... They had, sticking out from the riverside, still straight walls, which reduced the width of the actual river to the big boats. And it speeded up the flow, of course, which helped the traffic, I guess. Made it deeper, perhaps, too, by flowing faster. And we should have worked something out, but we didn't. Nobody had done it before, of course, and come back and said, "If you get on a river, go down the... keep to the right," like our traffic is. And we only think, well, never mind. However, he took us to the village pub. And he's a nice guy, really. I mean, nice little ordinary village policeman. Brought us a beer, brought us a drink anyway, and some cheese. I remember a rather nice German or Polish cheese, and bread and cheese, because we were pretty hungry. And rang up the... whoever he did ring up. They must have headquarters. I don't think we told them we came from Sargon, but we may have done. And at that point, shall we stop for a moment and just think, have a think? Okay. He must have rung up the local headquarters somewhere, either Sargon or the police. I guess a... To me, the word... I don't know if this is right. The Geheimstaatspolizei is the Gestapo thing, isn't it? If you take out the letters and line them up. And I think it was the Geheimstaatspolizei who came to pick us up, not Sargon, Luftwaffe, because we were picked up and... Oh, yes. They walked us to the middle of this wood. It's all woods around there. And these two chaps in a Mercedes, probably, appeared, to take us back to wherever they were going to take us. Henry reckons that they were Gestapo types. They weren't what Luftwaffe, they weren't the local policeman's friends. They didn't behave like the policeman's friends. But however, he had the most awful fears that something might go wrong being in a wood with these two guys, but it didn't. And this is only comes out of your mind because that's what happened to a lot of people. And when you read about it, you think, well, that could have happened to us, but it didn't. We were taken back to Sargon. So we're back in the cells at Sargon.
And that's where...
That's after about 5 days, I think.
And, Bill, as we're just at the end of this tape, we're just at the end of this tape, so we will continue. If you give me a moment, we'll continue on the next tape. Bill, you were telling me that you line up your aircraft upwind of the...
It's on, is it?
Yes. Upwind of the beacon.
You've got to cross the beacon.
Yes.
Preferably in a direction in which you know you can carry on flying. Either north, south, east or west. I mean, you'd set it up. And it tells you when you'll go overhead. So that you know you've arrived home, but you've just got to get down. So at that point you set up this 200 feet a minute rate of descent, very slowly coming down, and just wait for a lovely hiss on the back end and you're there. That's what he said. And he was sitting in his wheelchair, he's on a wheelchair, this chap,